From our studio in Houston, Texas,
it's time for the Angry Admins Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Angry Admins Podcast. It is July 8th, 2008, episode 75. My name is Joe Bibby.
My name is Ryan Necessary.
And we are back again with another finely tuned episode. We have narrowed down the greatest stories of the last 2 weeks or week, and we are going to send them your way.
Yep. I am the caged sysadmin flinging IT poo through the bars.
That's
users.
A good description. Yes. I like it.
That's been my week.
So why don't you get us started, Ryan, with a story?
Okay. So this came out on July the 2nd. There was the Pew Internet, group did a study about broadband speeds and Americans' usage of the Internet and how much they're paying and how fast their connections are. Because, you know, there's always these stories about, oh, well, Japan is so much faster than us, and all these other countries are outrunning the U.S. Internet speeds. And, you know, we talked about all the factors involved in that. But the surprising thing of this study was that most folks don't really want faster Internet.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of them are afraid that the cost will go up. But a lot of folks, even people with dial-up, are like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine with dial-up. And then they're even asking, like, DSL and cable users, like, hey, are you okay with how fast it is? And, you know, the big chunk of the folks who responded said, yeah, I'm fine with how fast this is. So it's just surprising.
It is surprising.
I think the people with dial-up don't know how good they could have mm-hmm. it if they had real broadband. And I think the broadband users are kind of just in a state of apathy because the cable companies, most of them are so bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're just kind of...
Yeah, I agree with that.
I think they're already paying so much for kind of crappy service mm-hmm. that... When you start talking about, hey, faster, then, you know, there's this thing in their head where they're just like, well, faster equals more money and the same crappy service, so why would I do that?
Well, and I think a lot of it comes down to what they're actually doing with their internet connection. You know, a lot of people still have not discovered the new things. And you know, sorry, I'm still just stuck on these people on dial-up. I can't believe that they're happy with it. That just shocks me. And the fact is... The average price of dial-up these days is like $20 a month, which is more than the cheapest DSL.
Right.
So I don't understand that. But anyway, you know, it comes down to people who don't think they need faster internet just haven't found a service that is bandwidth hungry.
Right.
All they're doing is checking email and browsing, you know.
Right.
They're looking at YouTube videos and they're looking at just standard websites.
Yeah. Well, and the dial-up users who are satisfied are probably just checking email.
Right.
And maybe a little bit of browsing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I think it does come down to cost. You know, if broadband prices were cheaper, then more people would want it, but more people aren't going to want it until those prices go down, and the companies don't want to bring down prices because they don't think the demand is there. So,
right.
You know, it's the danger we run into, but yeah. But speaking of Japan, apparently Japan is even running into some bandwidth issues, even with their crazy 100 megabit internet connections. The biggest company there, NTT Communications, is going to introduce an upload limit, just like Comcast and Time Warner are thinking about.
Oh, man, that's horrible.
It is horrible, but it's 30 gigabytes a day.
Wow.
So, and that's only upload, by the way.
Yeah.
Download is unlimited.
Hmm. So.
And what wasn't Comcast thinking about 30 gigabytes a month?
Yeah.
Downloading.
30 or 40 a month.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, that just shows you how far behind we are. Which I know we've talked about endlessly, but I just it bugs me. It really bugs me.
So here's the rub there. If that's the limit, then there are people who were using more than that.
Yeah, so what it says in the story, this was on PC World. Let's see, let me find it real quick. So a small number of individual users have been monopolizing substantial network resources by uploading massive amounts of data, which can slow the speed of the network and lower communication quality from others. So, I mean, yeah, that means several people were just uploading crazy amounts of data.
Well, you know, the Japanese, they tend to be, you know, clustered in the giant apartment buildings.
Right.
And so they probably have fiber to, if not the individual apartment, you know, at least, you know, fiber is very close to where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a big fat pipe there waiting.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the torrent and the P2P uses in overseas, you know, for countries like Japan.
Right.
But
with a pipe like that, you could set up your own server inside your apartment. I mean, that could easily be what was happening.
Wow.
It's, you know, crazy. We're way behind, and Japan is pulling ahead. Korea is ahead. Pretty much most of East Asia is way ahead of us, and we are scrambling to catch up. Apparently, only 10% of us are doing that, or whatever that number was.
Right. Well, speaking, you know, we're talking about this broadband thing. There was an interesting story over on Ars Technica a few days back, and they were talking about, you know, ISPs now for broadband are wanting to charge more and set caps and make more money. And basically the author of the article, which we'll have a link to in the show notes, they're talking about the maximum, you know, the heaviest users of any broadband service are usually the file sharers.
Right.
So if they start introducing caps with, you know, overage limits, so, okay, you broke your cap. Well, we're just going to charge you X more dollars this month. If the paradigm holds up, which I don't believe it always does, that, you know, all P2P is all illegal, then that means that we're going to have ISPs making a lot of money off of illegal file sharing.
That is very true.
That's crazy, right?
So, yeah. I mean, so they'll be the only ones making money off of it. And
they're kind of playing both sides of the fence, because on the one hand, they're telling the MPAA and the RIA, oh, we're going to help you track down all these bad file sharers and stuff. But are they really? Because if they're making money off of it now, where's their motivation to actually do that?
Exactly.
You know, and how long before the movie industry and the recording industry starts coming after ISPs and saying, kind of like on the Zune, where they said, well, we expect everyone who has a Zune to have some percentage of illegal music, so we're just going to charge you up front to try to get our money back.
So started on that one again.
Right. So, I mean, apply that to this now. What if they start coming after the ISP saying, well, we know you're going to make a lot of money off of illegal file sharing, so we want a chunk of that back.
Right. Oh, yeah. I'm sure the lawyers are already writing up papers on that one.
I don't know. This is, of course, the people that are going to get hurt the worst is the user.
Right.
As always.
Yeah. I mean, the people just stop doing a lot of these activities, and that's pretty tragic, because that just means there won't be any need for growth. And so the companies will stop expanding their networks, and it's just going to slow us down even more.
Right.
These caps are just no good for everyone, because it means less customers for the broadband companies.
Well, it's going to reach a momentum to where, you know, okay, so if we have a big fat pipe to everyone's household, it's all going to be used for illegal stuff, and we can't support the bandwidth, and, you know, there's going to be all these excuses, and eventually, you know, the broadband's just going to die out.
Yeah. That's it's tragic.
Unless the people who are, unless the media companies embrace it and figure out, you know, if we support a fat pipe into the house, then we could push, you know, all of our movies.
Mm-hmm.
So on opening day, I don't have to go see WALL-E at the theater with the screaming kids. I
can
just watch it in my house. But that's like a dream.
Maybe WiMAX will save us.
No,
it won't. You're right.
Municipal Wi-Fi won't save us?
No. Mini Wi-Fi won't save us either. So, you know, we've been talking a lot about file sharing. I actually have a couple apps I wanted to share. The first one is called TED. It's an acronym for Torrent Episode Downloader.
Ooh.
And this is a Java app that basically, you know, if you are a episodic television watcher,
right,
and you don't want to pay for cable,
Your
option is go to the websites or download torrents,
right?
And you can, you know, try to find an RSS feed for those TV shows, but, you know, what if it comes out faster on Minova than it does on Pirate Bay? Or, you know, you want to get that TV show as fast as you possibly can for free, and you want to do it very easily. This basically makes getting those torrents super, super easy. It's a Java app, so it's cross-platform, requires Java 5 plus, and it requires a separate BitTorrent client. This is all this does is find the shows for you, find the torrent, and send it to your torrent client, which is what I love about it. It's not trying to be, one of the things I don't like about like Azurius is that it's kind of bloated, because it does all of this stuff and other things, and it's trying to be like a browser and a music player and a media player. So I like specialized apps. This one, you basically open up the browser in this, and it just lists a bunch of the shows on the left. You click on that show, you click on either an old episode or you click on upcoming, and you basically just subscribe to that. And it goes out and parses all of these different places that those episodes will eventually be available. And when it's available, grabs the torrent file, sends it to your torrent app, and downloads it.
Nice.
And I've tried it out on a couple different shows. Works great. I love it.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
So you can use it with your favorite BitTorrent client, and it's free.
Nice. Yeah, I might have to actually hook that up.
So we'll have a link to that in the show notes, but the URL is ted.nu. So go check it out, download it now, and let us know what you think.
Wow, that's cool. Moving on, there was a Trend Micro, the company that does like antivirus and different things like that for corporations. They surveyed 1,600 companies in the U.S., the U.K., Germany, and Japan, and they were basically asking folks about data security and, like, you know, hey, of all the data that you see come across your computer screen or your desk, you know, can you identify which of it is, you know, confidential and which of it is public, and, you know, would you be able to tell the difference?
Mm-hmm.
And in general, the U.S. did a little better than the other countries because there's more training here, they said, but basically the kind of the punchline for the article is that employee leaks of data and information are more they're a bigger security risk than malware.
Wow.
So
yeah, I believe it. I believe it 100%.
Because I mean, no matter how much, you know, patching you do or how much antivirus you have, you know, one employee who's careless or, oh, oops, I didn't mean to delete that directory on the server with all of our stuff in it.
Right.
You know, I mean, one person who has access can do much more damage than, you know, bad files or, you know, Trojans or anything like that.
Well, and even with just leaking information, I mean, thumb drives are, they're going like CD-ROMs these days. I mean, people burn them, you know, throw stuff on there and throw them, pass them out. And, you know, those don't disappear. You know, CD-ROM, it doesn't tend to last. People don't keep them around like a CDR, but, you know, thumb drive, you get some sensitive data on that and pass it out, it's gone.
Of course, you know, Trend Micro is bringing this issue to light around the same time that they're introducing their new Trend Micro leak-proof software.
Do they really have a new software that helps with this very problem?
It does.
Oh, brought to you by Trend Micro.
Your friends.
And IT.
IT. Yes. Yeah, so how fortuitous.
Yes.
Just the serendipity. I'm just overcome. No, but anyway.
Well, yeah, but it's true. I mean, security is more about controlling the human side really than anything, and you know, you can have as much security as you want, but it's not gonna keep the man down.
Yeah, it's all the user's fault.
So continuing with my media blitz and use of bandwidth, I have another app that I found through the Twitter. It's called BoxE, BoxEe. It is currently in closed alpha. I have been fortunate enough to have been given an invitation to the closed alpha. This is so elite, it's not even in beta.
So the closed alpha means we have a name and like a font, and that's all.
See, that's what I was thinking, but check this out. I'm going to show this to you.
Oh, snap.
So you have a login. I'm pulling up this app right now.
Mm-hmm.
This is based on Xbox Media Center.
Okay.
So, which has been open sourced and is available on SourceForge. These two guys have built this. Basically, the story behind it is they were, one guy in like 2004 bought a Windows Media Center PC, set it all up, and then realized how lame it was, and his buddy came and set up Xbox Media Center on his Xbox for him, and it was 1,000 times better than what Microsoft was offering for a large fee.
Right.
And so they were like, well, let's see what we can do. And they started working with Xbox Media Center, and then they've now expanded on it and built on top of it. You create a login on their site, you log in, and you get a nice nice little menu system here that's all kind of flashy, animated, but still clean.
Mm-hmm.
This is also cross-platform, by the way. Yeah. Mac, Windows, I think even Linux.
So it kind of took over our desktop.
Yeah, so it kind of took over our desktop. It's kind of this green color, and you have video, music, you know, your standard pictures. But what's nice is it's all integrated with internet information as well, including internet videos. They already have Revision 3 in here, CNET TV stuff, Blip TV, YouTube. And you just, you know, you start scrolling through these videos, and this is all can be controlled with your Mac remote, or if you have a remote for your PC, you can do it that way. And you can just start playing them, and it's all this nice, clean, large interface meant to be displayed on a TV.
Wow, nice.
It's pretty cool. So, you know, if you're interested, go sign up for a invite. I don't think I have any invites to share, but, you know, definitely check it out. It's I think this is where our TV is going.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to be using in a few years. We will see this embedded in our TV, or we'll be using like a Roku box with something like this on it. This to me makes Apple TV look pathetic. Mm. I mean, you can't buy anything on this, but yeah, all the free content out there is usable.
Wow.
And you can watch your own videos, movies, etc. You know, you've seen these kind of things before, but this is like the nicest, cleanest,
it is very
looking
nice
one that I've seen in a long time.
Wow, that is very cool.
So we'll have a link in the show notes. Go check it out. Go support these guys. Apparently, there's a vote up on SourceForge. You can vote them to be, what is it, Community Choice Awards is what it is. Mm. So go vote for these guys. They've put a lot of work into it, and it's a pretty amazing project. And it's all open source, available for free.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I love that. I'm going to try to get in.
I'll see if I can get you an invite.
Nice. Okay, there was some news the other day about Gmail. I'm sure a lot of you guys are Gmail users, as Joe and I are. There's some upcoming features that are coming out really soon, and they're doing some security upgrade type things, and they're going to increase protection from unauthorized logins.
Oh, okay.
So, nice. And they're going to let you kind of keep an eye on, you know, when you were logged into your account. So if you suspect that, oh, maybe I left a cookie on that browser on that other PC and someone's jumping in, and, oh, I know I wasn't there, then you'll be able to basically just look online to see, you know, when did you access your email.
That's nice.
Another cool thing is they're going to let you log out remotely. So if you're like, oh, crud, I was at the library, because, you know, hey, we all go to the library these days. I was at the library and I forgot to log off my Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll be able just to go on Gmail and just say, log me out everywhere.
That's nice.
Bam, done. So that's pretty cool. Mm. So they're going to let you track user access by browser type, IP, date.
Wow.
If it's POP3, if it's mobile, all kinds of stuff. So
that's actually really cool. I mean, it's the problem with being in the cloud, so they say, the kids are saying that these days, is that if you do go log in somewhere, you know, even if it's just you're over at someone's house, you're using their computer real quick to check your email or show them something in your email, and then like you forget to log out or your cookie information is still there, and you're like, I'm always a little worried that someone's gonna, I mean, not that I have any secrets in my email, but you know, someone play a joke on you or a prank or something, you know. And it's nice that Google has never really been strong on the security side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see him put some time into that.
The strength of Gmail is also its risk. You know, the fact that
exactly
everywhere I go, I can hit Gmail and log in. But, you know, you might be hitting it from a whole bunch of different browsers
mm-hmm.
that have different levels of security settings and different levels of cookies. And I mean, if I logged in with Opera, which I'm not an Opera user or a Safari user, so I wouldn't immediately know how to clear out those cookies and, you know, delete the cache and mm-hmm. do all that there. But with this, I wouldn't have to know. I could just tell it, look, wherever I am, just log me out.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
So, I don't know, kind of a small thing, but Gmail just keeps getting a little bit better.
I like it. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to discuss the consumerization of IT. This idea piqued my interest this past week when I saw a story on Ars Technica, which is a great site that I read pretty regularly. The title of the story was Analysis, IT Consumerization, and the Future of Work. And this is an article by John Stokes that basically he goes over several reasons why he sees IT consumerization and what that means and what it's going to be. So a little overview, what he's talking about is basically consumer products coming into the business world. And that's a kind of a brief breakdown. And we've kind of touched on this subject before in the past on Angry Admins, and where we've kind of hated on the idea of using consumer products in the workplace. But what he's talking about specifically is actually taking a consumer product and beefing it up and hardening it and making it useful in a corporate world.
Mm-hmm.
He references something like the iPhone, where it started out as a very consumer device, and now you can definitely see them targeting the business world, adding exchange support and several other things. And, you know, it was a big highlight. And he mentioned several other things. He mentions virtualization and how that makes it easy for a small company to have large support and things like that. But anyway, I just wanted to talk about this a little bit, and, you know, how this interacts with cloud computing and the movement of apps to the web, and is this good or bad for IT departments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a few things here with that. One thing being that, you know, the person at home that buys electronics is the same person that is going to show up in the workplace
and
make decisions about, you know, things that are being bought there. So, you know, on the weekend, if you go looking for an MP3 player, you're looking for features, you're looking for usability, you're looking for cost and aesthetics and different things. And then when you go to work and you have to make purchasing decisions there, you're looking for the same things. You want things for your employees that are usable, things that are cost effective, things that have a feature set that, you know, make it useful for different people in different roles. And for electronics makers and computer makers and things like that, all of these different things, really, if you improve how well it works for regular consumers, you're improving how well it could perform in the business sector.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, to go along with that, you know, you can't just sell one thing. You know, it's not one size fits all.
Right.
But through the magic of software, because software, you know, is where the fulcrum is of how you can, you know, really leverage what is happening on the device. So you have software that can change or be modular, or basically, you know, you have Vista Home, or you have Vista Business, or you have Vista Ultimate,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, it's just code, you know, so the same computer can do multiple roles depending on what code is executed on. Same for a phone, same for a PDA, same for your wristwatch or a GPS or whatever. Basically, the fact that the software can do whatever you want and can even change roles, you know, on the fly, you know, that's a good thing for the consumer products, because with the software download, now it can be upgraded like the iPhone.
Right. And one of the things the article points out that kind of drives home this whole point, similar to what you're discussing, is that it used to be business drove technology.
Exactly.
Because they were the only ones who could afford it.
Right.
And now they're finding that more consumers are pushing the hardware. They're buying more than businesses. Businesses only upgrade every 3 years.
Exactly.
And consumers are upgrading every year, practically.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the case for everyone, but there's enough of us out there who like to upgrade and like to stay on top of things and stay at the front of the curve that, you know, they're finding that they're having to meet the needs of those people before business, because businesses don't like change. They don't like things to move ahead. So it's no longer necessary to target them to make the money.
And the thing that, so there you almost have the consumers pulling the business along,
right?
Because, you know, before the meeting starts, everyone's sitting in the conference room complaining about, God, I can't believe we still have the blah, blah, blah model when, you know, me and everyone on my street already has the new thing, you know, and how long is it going to be before we can upgrade? And
right.
How come I can do this at home so fast, and at work I'm stuck with this 3-year-old thing? And so,
right.
I mean, in that case, you actually have the home users pulling the business along, kicking and screaming, you know, to upgrade.
And sometimes you see consumers starting the trend, businesses pick it up and kind of carry it. Two good examples are blogging and podcasting. Blogging started out, it was pretty much just someone at their house blogging, and, you know, didn't really have very much credibility. And then businesses started to form around those. You see companies like Engadget being bought up by AOL, and then it becomes almost an official, you know, journalistic technology. And then you start seeing newspapers setting up blogs online, because they realize that's what people want. They want the up-to-date, on-demand news. Mm-hmm. Same with podcasts. Podcasts started out with just a couple guys in their house recording stories, and then you see things like This American Life converting over to podcast and shooting to the top of the list, and suddenly podcasts are credible, and now you get advertising on podcasts, and people are making money, and, you know, it's their full-time job versus just a hobby.
Right.
And you see the same thing in corporations where people get used to these social interactions like Facebook and Instant Messenger, and those get slowly transitioned into corporate culture because people are used to communicating that way. So eventually, when those people grow up and get real jobs, they're used to communicating that way. That means that's the way the corporation needs to communicate if they want to be efficient.
Yeah. And I think in particular, you know, I mean, this podcast that we're doing now is, you know, our target audience is IT workers and people that like IT.
Sure.
I think our demographic probably has a bigger than normal influence on those things being adopted, because, you know, a lot of times we don't have the budget or we don't have the influence that we would like in our organizations. But when it comes to implementation and adoption of technology, we can be the ones championing, you know, wouldn't this be great if we had a blog and people could, you know, understand this, you know, and wouldn't it be good if, you know, we had a weekly podcast where, you know, our customers or our clients could know what we're talking about and have a forum to discuss, you know, products and services and things like that. So,
and then it can, on our side also, it can be very frustrating because we see the value of something like that.
Right.
And then
they don't implement.
They just say, well, I just want to do my job. I just want to this and I don't want any extra work.
Well, and, you know, in today's world, there's so much CYA happening. Like, oh, well, what are the potential problems with telling people, you know, an honest, you know, dialogue? Right. And, you know, we don't want people knowing what we think and, you know, how we do business, because then that would be terrible.
Yeah, everything has to be filtered, and you have to put up a perfect front. And
right. And I have so much more interest in the companies that kind of provide that, you know, at least the appearance of transparency. You know, I mean, if I can, I mean, when I read ValleyWag, and I mean, I see all the dirty, gritty details of what's happening in Silicon Valley. I mean, I can identify with those companies more because they're showing me the personalities of the people that are driving them, and the CEOs and the board members and the venture capitalists. And, you know, that gives me an insight to kind of the flavor behind the scenes of what's happening there. And then that lets me kind of, I guess, vote with my dollars and my usage of different websites, and like, oh, they're kind of shady, I don't want to get into that. Or I don't support, you know, the Yahoo board decision, so I'm going to, you know, put my stuff over here away from that. And
well, it brings it back to a small sort of like a town feeling where, you know what's going on with everybody. And you go to the grocery store and you know the owner.
Right.
You know, it may not be a two-way thing, but, you know, you just feel that connection with the company, or you feel a no connection and you just don't use them anymore.
Right. So to bring this back to the consumerization thing, if your IT professionals are into podcasting or blogging or, you know, social network sites or whatever, this not only, I mean, I guess we're talking about IT consumerization. We started off as hardware, but I mean, it's software too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And really it's just kind of the whole concept of what we use at home being brought into the workplace and, you know, kind of having one mode of, you know, the things I do on Saturday afternoon with my blog or the things I'm doing on Tuesday afternoon at work, you know, and that's, I think that could be a good thing. I mean, some people say, oh, well, that's crappy because then you're doing the same thing at work that you're doing at home, and that ruins your, you know, once you get paid to do something, it's no longer fun. But I think we're kind of reaching the point where people are working so many hours a week. I mean, not me, of course, because, but I think a lot of people are working so many hours a week that, you know, we're looking for that kind of mesh between the work-life balance. So if you're kind of always off work, if you're kind of always at work, if you're kind of always doing a little bit of play, something fun and something a little productive, then you can maybe aim for that balance better.
Right.
And maybe just, you know, if you got a cup of coffee and you're writing your work blog, I mean, there are worse ways to spend a day than that. And I know because I've done those things.
Yeah. You know what? I think there's also dangers to this whole concept. And I think this whole, the idea is inevitable. It seems to be where things are going. It's where trends are going. And as businesses continue to kind of shrink their IT departments, I think we'll see more of this happening where companies will target consumers. But some of the dangers are, you know, businesses want reliable. Consumers want up to date. consumers want bleeding edge. Those two don't mix.
Right.
And, you know, businesses, you don't want, you want 3 years from now to be able to order a replacement part for that computer.
Yeah.
So if that model is now 7 or 8 generations old, companies can't keep those in stock.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful with these. You know, we still, it's important, I think, for companies to realize they need to not forget about those businesses, because it may only be every 3 years, but every 3 years they're buying a whole bunch of hardware or software or whatever it is.
And that's why I think, you know, you have to start out with, you know, whether you're talking about a server for your blog or a PDA for your employees or cell phones or whatever it is, you have to start out with A, solid hardware that's going to have a good lifespan, and B, you know, this goes back to me harping about the software that runs on this stuff, that it needs to be forward and backward compatible. So, I mean, you have to be smart about that. So it's like, okay, when we get the Gen 2 PDAs, they're going to have to work with the Gen 1s.
Exactly.
So that we don't have to switch everyone at the same time. And there's this huge, you know, catastrophic changeover that everyone hates IT guy now even more. So, I mean, I think it can work, but I think they're going to have to be smart about the planning of it and the execution.
I agree. All right, that's going to wrap up another episode of Angry Admins. If you are interested in any of the stories we talked about this week, feel free to go to the website angryadmins.com. If you have ideas, questions, comments, send those to feedback@angryadmins.com. If you are interested in the Boxy Alpha, I do have a few invites available, so send those requests to feedback@angryadmins.com and we will get those out to you if desired. Again, I am... You can follow me during the week on twitter.com/bibz, B-I-B-Z. Until next week, I'm Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
Stay angry.